الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا إنه من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله وصفيه من خلقه وخليله بلغ الرسالة وأدى الأمانة ونصح الأمة وكشف الغمة وتركها على المحجة البيضاء ليلها كنهارها لا يزيغ عنها إلا هالك. أما بعد فإن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله تعالى وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. وما قل وكفى خير مما كثر وألهى وإنما توعدون لآت وما أنتم بمعجزين. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون. يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما. أما بعد عباد الله to proceed or servants of Allah, we certainly cannot talk enough about the responsibility, the prime and main responsibility of the individual Muslims and the Muslim society at large towards younger generations and towards the offspring. This is a very essential work that has to be done by a society like this, by a community like this that lives outside of the mainland of Islam. It is an essential work that has to be done by every Muslim everywhere and by every Muslim community everywhere. Yet it becomes even more important for a community that lives outside of the land of Islam. And that is pretty straightforward, pretty simple to a concept to understand, because the challenges are greater and the resources are less, and the children have shown, or in previous experiences. And when I talk about previous experiences, I'm comparing to places like Latin America, you know, immigration to Latin America. And I'm not talking about immigration to China, and that is usually, or immigration to Malaysia, or immigration to Indonesia, where Muslims started, you know, as a small community, or a few immigrants or traders who settled in these parts of the main Muslim land. This is quite different, because then the Muslims moved as groups and they settled in villages, and there was no public schooling, and they schooled their kids on their own, and the Muslimdom, between quotation marks, the Muslimdom at the time was the dominant power. So they did not have any inferiority complex. In fact, they came from the land of Islam, which is a prosperous land, which is, you know, a powerful nation. So when they went to those places and they settled in them, they did not have any inferiority. And they were settling there in groups, in villages of their own. And they had complete control over the education of their kids because there was no public schooling, an idea that later came to the world in Germany to indoctrinate the German population and change them from Catholicism to become Protestant, and then spread thereafter. So that is a completely different experience. But what I'm talking about is the newer experiences such as the immigration to Latin America and places like this. And in the newer experiences that we can compare ourselves to them, there have been enormous challenges. And there have been, in many places, there is success everywhere. And the Prophet ﷺ said, "Ummati kalmatar la yudra awaluha khayrun am akhiruha." My nation is like rain. You do not know which part of it is best, the first or the last. So there are successes that are being made in different places, including Latin America and in other places, but there have been enormous failures that we cannot afford to repeat. The issue here is that failure means that the offspring will leave this land, you know, will become atheists, will choose a different religion, and so on and so forth. So these failures, we cannot afford to take that risk. Just the risk of failure, we cannot afford to take that risk. So the failures that we can see clearly in other communities that immigrated in previous times, we cannot afford to repeat the same course that they took. Therefore, it takes more and more of our thought. It should take more and more of our thought and our work to avoid such failures that are extremely expensive. They come at a very expensive price, which is the loss of our children, the loss of our descendants. And you will not be pleased, even if you are in your grave, even on the day of resurrection, you will not be pleased to know that your grandchild so-and-so did not make it. Left this land. So it is an issue that we have to talk about a lot, and it has to take a lot of our attention. In order for us to be able to handle this issue, we have to understand that for children, they go through different stages. You can roughly divide the stages of childhood into three stages. The last one of them is young adulthood. Yet they are usually still under your care, so you still need to think about that last stage. The first one would be what is called early childhood, which is until age 7 years. And the second one will be late childhood, which is between 7 to 14. And the third one would be 14 to 21, and that is the age of young adulthood. That's the age of graduation from childhood to adulthood. And in Islam, it is 15 to 21. 15 is the last age for the attainment of puberty. If someone did not attain puberty by age 15, they are considered to be adults by age 15, according to the majority of the scholars. There are opinions that it is 17 or 18 for boys and girls, however, for the majority of the scholars, it is age 15. The first seven years are a stage of trust building and suggesting to the children. It is using the power of suggestibility, and it is trust building. Trust building is for the child to understand and be convinced and be assured that you're always there for their help, that you're going to be there when they're hungry to feed them, that you're going to be there when they are afraid to give them assurance and to protect them and to give them security. That is called trust building. It is extremely essential that this trust building starts from day one. There should be trust building from day one. The child should be assured that if he is on a high place and you invite him to jump, that he will be able to catch him. And that is the feeling of trust, that you will be there, and if you're the one, the father or the mother, who's telling him to jump, then jumping is safe, and he will be secure in your hands when he arrives down. So it is a matter of trust building in this age group. But it is not only trust building. There are also some disciplining, but it is not the prime work that you will do in that age group, the 0 to 7, or from day 1 until age 7. It is not the main work. The main work is trust building, to give them that assurance that you are a protector for them. You know, the protector and the guardian and the maintainer is Allah. But you are, you know, out of all human beings, the two parents are their protectors, their guardians, their maintainers, their sustainers. They're the ones who love them the most, and so on and so forth. It's, once you have built that trust, 90% of the work in the future will be done. If you build that trust, 90% of your work in the future, raising those kids, will be already a given. While you're doing this, you will suggest to them, many things. There is education, you know, by verbal education. You tell them this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad. But most of the time, and predominantly in this age group, it is using the power of suggestibility, meaning that it is all indirect education. When you buy them a gift and they thank you, tell them, it is Allah who helped me buy you this gift. So thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So you're suggesting to the mind of the mind of the child that Allah is the giver. Allah is the giver. Allah is the maintainer. Allah is the provider. You're suggesting that it is indirect, but it settles in the mind with repetition. Repetition. So, in any occasion, something good happens, even if you buy the child ice cream and he thanks you, you say, well, thank you for thanking me, but also do not forget to thank Allah because He is the one who helped me do this, or He is the one who caused me to do this, or He is the one who gave us money to do this. It does not mean that you have to do this every time. It's not an obligation to do it every time. But if you repeat this, what will be suggested to the child is that Allah loves us, Allah protects us, Allah, you know, even when you protect them or you give them security and so on, you tell them that it is Allah who, you know, ultimately protects us. So you're suggesting so many meanings to the child indirectly without direct exhortation. Because in this age group, direct exhortation is usually not very effective because they don't really rationalize that much in this age group. So you're suggesting there is some disciplining that you will do directly, particularly with certain etiquettes and manners, the etiquette of talking to others, the etiquette of using the bathroom, and so on and so forth. For instance, when the etiquette of using the bathroom is important, and it can start very early. You tell the child, make sure when you leave the bathroom that the next one who will walk in will be pleased, will not be offended, will be pleased. It teaches them to care for others and to respect the rights of others, and so on and so forth. From age 7 to age 15, that is late childhood, and that is an extremely important and vital stage. Your main work, your predominant work in this age group will be disciplining. It is divided into two parts. That age itself, the 7 to 15, is divided into two parts. The earlier part of this is 7 to 10. 7 to 10, we remember an important hadith that talks to us about the two numbers, 7 and 10. What is this hadith? The hadith is reported by Ahmad and Hakim. The Prophet ﷺ said, مروا أولادكم بالصلاة لسبع وضربوهم عليها لعشر وفرقوا بينهم في المضاجع. Command your kids to pray at age 7, spank them if they don't at age 10, and separate between them in bed. It tells us that at age 7, you are old enough to be taught direct exhortation, teaching. Not necessarily just suggesting, but also this is the age where teaching starts. Active teaching should start at age 7. And the child should be expected to retain information, should be expected to understand if you talk at his level. He should be expected to understand if you talk at his level at age 7. So this is the age where you truly predominantly should be involved in teaching the child and disciplining in an atmosphere of love, certainly in an atmosphere of caring love. That is the 7 to 10. Well, once the child reaches the age 10, the jurists, al-fuqaha, yusammunahu madhinnat al-bulugh. The jurists call the age 10 is the age at which puberty is possible. Puberty is possible. Then they start to treat the child as if they reached puberty. Because at this age, puberty is possible. And then you're not going to investigate on every child, did he reach puberty, did she reach puberty. But at age 10, puberty is possible. Then at this age, since it is possible, and since the records, the scriptures, every one of us has records and scriptures, and since the records and scriptures now will be accepting reports of good and reports of bad. Before this age, only reports of good were recorded in the child's scriptures. But when the child reaches puberty, the scriptures will be recording not only the reports of good, but also the reports of bad. The awareness of the child must be brought to this fact. He may not have reached puberty at age 10, but then he should start to be on an accelerated track to adapt to the new stage that is coming very soon, which is the stage of young adulthood. You have to tell him that once you reach the stage of a young adulthood, you are completely responsible just like any one of us. You are accountable in the sight of God like any one of us. Your scriptures will be filled with reports of good and evil just like any one of us. That cannot come overnight. That needs training and that needs preparation and that needs the child to be put on that accelerated track to be able, when this truly happens, to adapt to the new stage in his life. So that is why we start this at age 10, to get the child to adapt to the new stage that is coming very soon. It could come at age 11, it could come at age 12, 13, 14, 15. But we have to get them prepared. And then the concept of فَرِّقُوا بَيْنَهُمْ فِي الْمَضَاجَةِ, separate between them and death. It teaches us that the child at this age, then we will start to be more aware of the child's gender. If he shows signs that he is more mature or has premature development in this area, then you start earlier. But at age 10, then the gender awareness should be brought into focus and separation in beds, and then the child will be treated like an adult. And as I usually say, you do not send an 11-year-old child back to the area of women to bring you food if they are not properly covered and they are not his non-marriageable kin. This child should be treated like an adult in this area. Should be treated and you should make him feel like he is an adult, and he will like that. If you make it in a respectful way, if you put it to him in a respectful way, that you are now a grown-up boy, you are now a grown-up girl, so you have to adapt to the new stage that you're going through, that will be helpful. But also, you know, now the child will be responsible in front of you. He may not be responsible in the sight of God yet because he has not reached puberty. But the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam tells us, spank them if they don't pray. And the word dribu here does not mean beat. It means spank. Because there is no beating of children. I mean, you're not going to punch the child and you're not going to kick the child. It is spanking. It is not beating. It is spanking in certain cases when the mistake or the fault is big enough to require this. And the negligence of prayers is a huge mistake. Lying is a huge mistake. But as I usually say, spilling milk on the expensive carpet is not a huge mistake. spilling milk on the expensive carpet irritates you, aggravates you. But it is not a mistake. I mean, if he did it out of negligence, then it is a mistake, but it is not a huge mistake and does not require except teaching, exhortation, you know, and maybe at one point with some firmness, but it is not a huge mistake. Even though spilling milk on the expensive carpet may aggravate you more than the negligence of prayers. But you have to be a true Muslim. You have to understand that in the sight of God, the child who spilled milk on the expensive carpet, the $2,000 carpet, which is not recommended to buy in the first place, the child who spilled milk on this carpet did not make a huge mistake, no matter how much it aggravated you. That's the impartiality that you should develop. But the child who lied made a huge mistake. And that needs to be corrected and fixed, because if this grows with the child, it will become a huge problem. The child who stole from his brother or sister, it is a huge mistake. You do not let it grow with the child. Even though he could have stolen a dollar versus the $2,000 carpet. He could have just stolen a dollar. It did not aggravate you so much personally on a personal level. But this is, if you're truly interested in the well-being of the child, in the well-being of the child, this is a much bigger problem than the carpet that was lost. أقول قولي هذا أستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروا. الحمد لله كفى والصلاة والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. Please move forward because there are people waiting outside. Then at age 15, or between age 14 to 15 to 21, between 14 to 15 to 21, this is a completely new stage in the child's life. This is the stage of young adulthood. All of the foundational work should have been done already. If you're waiting until 14 to start disciplining and teaching, that is too late. That does not mean don't do it. You still do it as much as you can, but you are certainly too late. All the foundational work should have been done already. But between 14 to 21 is a new stage. In this stage, the child will be seeking autonomy. And it is expected of the child, it is just natural. This is just a natural thing. Autonomy. And this autonomy, you have to address this stage with wisdom and prudence. To prudently address this stage, you will give the child autonomy. The example that is easy to understand is, if some of you went to Kenya, you know, I did not personally go, but I know of a zoo in Kenya that is called the Open Zoo. In the Open Zoo, all of the animals are inside this big zoo, and the people are the ones who are locked into the car. So the lions do not feed any cage, they do not feed the cage. So the lions roam around the zoo. They do not necessarily see their cages. There is a fence that is far away from their sight. Would you expect the lions in this zoo to act like the lions that are enclosed in a small cage? If you give a lion a small cage like this, and you put the lion inside this cage, well, the lion certainly will run out of the door once you open it, because he can't take being in a small cage. If you make the cage wider, the lion will be more at ease. Then the lion will not necessarily be like the first one, you know, who will be aggressive, depressed, and then will wait for the next first chance to run out of the door. But if you put the lion in that zoo, in that open zoo, there is a fence, but you have to understand, there is a fence. But the lion does not feel the burden of that fence, because he has enough room to roam around the zoo. That is what you need to do with your child when he is 14 to 21. There is a fence. The fence is hududullah, the bounds of Allah. Therefore, there should not be many other fences. You can have your own personal preferences, and you will try to suggest them to the child, because every parent likes his kid to be like him. You know, you like your kid to wear, you know, certain style or so. You can suggest it, but you can't force it. You can't force it. Because the bounds of Allah, the bounds of Allah are, to an extent, burdensome. Right? It's a burden. That's why it's called at-taklif. Taklif in Arabic means what? To ask someone to carry a burden. And taklifat, the awamr, the injunctions of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the prohibitions, taklif. You know, it is not easy for everyone to wake up for Salat al-Fajr. It's taklif. It is a burden. So there is a burden already. Do not make the burden more burdensome by adding your own preferences and tastes to that mixture. Keep the bounds, keep that fence, and do not make the cage narrower. The fence will be the bounds of Allah. In this case, the child will not feel imprisoned. Because the fence, remember, and this is something that you have to imply to him over and over, the fence is not put down by you. You are inside the fence as much as he is. The two of you, you're not outside the fence, and you're commanding him, do this, don't do that, and you're outside of the cage, and then you throw a little bit of meat into his cage. And no, this is not the case here. Both of you are inside this fence. The fence is it controls you as much as it controls him. And if that is the understanding, and if that's how you make him feel, the two of us are inside that fence, which is the bounds of Allah. You have to also understand that the burdens of a taklif are for your best interest. فَإِنَّ الشَّرِيعَ لَمْ تُوْدَعْ إِلَّا لِمَصَالِحَ الْعِبَادِ فِي الْعَاجِلِ وَالْآجِلِ. Because this sharia was not made except for the best interest of the servants of Allah or for the people. فِي الْعَاجِلِ وَالْآجِلِ. In this life and the one to come. In this life and the one to come. And he will feel the beauty of Islam, that the more you teach him about it, the more you take him places, and the more you make him understand and feel the beauty of this fence. Because everyone needs a fence. We as human beings in this world need a fence. And if you do not have that fence, you get depressed. And if you do not have that fence, you seek more and more pleasures, and you try to seek them in different ways, in crooked ways, in deviant ways. And then you will not get that depression, you will not get that pleasure, but what you will get instead is depression. And that is what most of the people who do not, you know, accept that sense, accept that burden, accept the authority of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the authority of God on them, fall into eventually, whether it's sooner or later. So that is something that they have to understand, that we are both inside this fence. It is extremely important that you encourage, because this is an age or this is a stage where the child will be seeking higher education. It is extremely important that you encourage your child to seek that higher education and to support him as much as you can. This deen changed this ummah within 100 years from, you know, nomads and, you know, even the city dwellers were not that particularly sophisticated as far as technology, as far as you know, technological advancement and the building of, you know, big civilizations and so on. But this thing changed the ummah within 100 years to be the greatest, and not the greatest only through power. It is the greatest through knowledge that was spread all over the world. There is no doubt. And it is a fact of history. Anyone who denies it will be unable to block the light of the sun. That throughout the Middle Ages, the light was coming out of this ummah, the mainland of Islam, the light of knowledge. In math, in science, algebra is a Muslim science. They founded it. It is a science that was started by Muslims. You know, the canon of Avicenna was taught in Europe for 300 years. It was the medical Bible in Europe. It has more authority than any other book of medicine that was taught in Europe, according to William Osler, the founder of the medical library, John Hopkins, and an Oxford professor. So how can we reclaim this this glory if we do not encourage our kids to our best ability to seek higher education and to support them in that pursuit? And certainly there is no time, but the issue of marriage is an important one. If the child is able to wait on marriage until they graduate, that is advisable, that is recommended, that is preferable. If they are unable and you feel the signs that it is too much of a burden for them to patience themselves, then try to support them in getting married. If someone can live in a studio on his own, he can have a partner. Because food is never a problem. The Prophet ﷺ said, طعام الواحد يكفي الاثنين, in a hadith that's reported by Bukhari and Muslim, وطعام الاثنين يكفي الاربعة. Food for one person is enough for two, and food for two is enough for four. And in some editions, food for four is enough for eight. Therefore, food will not be the problem. If they can live in a studio on their own, they can have a partner, and they can defer having kids until they graduate, until they both graduate. But at the same time, they will have some peace of mind because they're both married. If they cannot wait, if they can wait, then it's preferable to get done with your studies and then to defer the marriage until that point. اللهم اجعل حق حقا وارزقنا اتباعه وارنا الباطل باطلا وارزقنا اجتنابه اللهم لا تسلط علينا بذنوبنا من لا يحفظك ولا يرحمنا اللهم انك عفو تقدر فاعف عنا ربنا اتنا في الدنيا تقاها وزكها انت خير من زكاها انت وليها مولاها واتم الصلاه ان كنت تنعم شيئا منكر وذكر الله اكبر والله اعلم واسمع.